Welcome to the Disruption Podcast with Keegan Sard. A podcast all about the disruption in our lives, how to move with the times, and how it has only just begun.
Can I actually transform my Industrial Revolution company and compete with one of these startups or platform companies? Or do I have to start over?
Get ahead of the curve, and learn about new and emerging technologies that are shaping the world of tomorrow.
Welcome to 2019 and episode 5 of the Disruption Podcast. I have a bit of a confession to make. I have dropped the ball. This episode was supposed to launch over December, but the Christmas time is a little crazy here. It's pretty quiet and I decided to take a little bit of a break. People are coming back to work now, mid-January. They're over the hot weather, still a little bit of it to go. They're over the drinking, definitely over the drinking. But it's a great time to reflect on the lessons learned for 2018 and work on the goals, hopefully, you have for 2019. This year is no exception for me. My company turns 5. It's been a wild ride so far. I've helped startups and SMEs across the world in just random places like Copenhagen, Toronto, deep China, and just to name a few, you know, like... operated things differently. We've tried to be leaner, grown faster. We've hacked the shit out of it. It's just been a wild ride, and we've also hired some pretty smart people along the way to help us on the journey with a number of different startups, which has been great. This year I'm hoping to kick off a few projects of my own, and hopefully I can tell you more about that in the next episode. I'm hoping I can travel more, and I have the travel bug. I love it. And on the home front, I couldn't be happier. My wife is starting a new role in financial services. She's super pumped about it, and that makes me really happy. But anyway, I digress. This episode is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. It's the obsession with ownership and how the next generation of millennials could finally make it a thing of the past. I'm going to talk about millennials a fair bit today. It's me being one of them. They care a lot less about owning stuff, and they're more interested in access through things like the sharing economy, bartering, trading amongst friends to get the goods they desire, which is really, really interesting. To kick things off, I wanted to start with the Christmas retail trading period. December was terribly bad. Shopping center traffic practically collapsed to the worst it's been in 20 years. Now, one part is that millennials are buying less, and they're using less credit when they do buy, saving for it. And on the other hand, they're getting super savvy with technology offerings to get their shopping fix without breaking the bank. You've probably heard of them by now. I've been banging on about them for nearly a year, but it's Afterpay, and it's a great example of just disruption in the space. They've created a new version of lay-by, except you don't have to wait for your item until you've paid it off. Like, you can just take it straight away and pay the item in 4 installments, which is super cool. The other crazy trend I'm seeing in retail is the rise of Instagram fashion. And what I mean by that is Barclaycard released a report saying that nearly 1 in 10 UK shoppers admit to buying clothing only to take a photo for social media and then they return the item the next day. That's just messed up. What have we become where it's all about social status, but it's all fake? That's crazy. Fake news, right? The other big disruptor, I think, in this space is online shopping. And certainly they've, done that to themselves because, if you look at the Instagram fashion, they offer free returns, you free shipping. They make it super easy to go, oh, yeah, I'll just try it on. And, oh, yeah, it doesn't work. I'll send it back. They're super aggressive with strategies around discounting. They're moving the traditional spends that we would traditionally see in Christmas time, December, into early months of like November and October, and in some cases even September, which blows my mind. My view here is that to survive going forward, traditional retail is going to need to have an online presence as well, and it has to be good. I'll give you an example. The likes of our two biggest department stores, Myer and David Jones, have the worst digital offerings. They just outright suck. And they don't compete to the Net-a-Porters or the MatchesFashion.com or even luxury brands. One that does it really, really well is Burberry. Actually, speaking of luxury brands, I also see a shift here too. I see products going more customized, more personalized than ever before. I think especially millennials want truly unique experiences. They want unique purchases. They want an opportunity to feel like the product matters because they've spent a lot of money on it. It also has benefits in regards to theft because you can't resell that item as easily because it's got your initials or your name on it. And most importantly, for retailers, it stops returns entirely because as soon as you customize or personalize an item, you can't take it back. So I think it's something to watch. Next up is home ownership. Australians are obsessed with home ownership, and I just laugh. I think we've all had this conversation around the dinner table. It was drilled into our grandparents, then passed on to our parents, and then on to us, that if you don't buy a home, you're just not successful. You're making someone else rich by renting, and you will be just a miserable person and won't make it in life. I think we can all relate to that. However, that attitude is now seeing everyone over-leveraged, and this obsession is putting immense strain on families, on budgets, and could very well be a catalyst for a recession this year. Australia's household debt to GDP ratio is now at a staggering 121%. Property prices have been falling for months, and analysts are saying it could top 20%+ this year. I think it could even go further than that. I think it could be closer to 30, but we're also seeing banks making lending practically impossible. With the Royal Commission report due out in February. So even if you did find a buyer for your home, they just can't buy it because they can't get finance. And it's not like it used to be. Banks used to be super easy lenders. They're just like, oh, what do you make? Oh yeah, what do you spend? Oh yeah, here's money. And now they're like, oh, what do you make? Oh yeah, what do you spend? Oh, where's the rest? Where's the delta? Or they're like, oh, let's just look line by line. Oh, you like Uber Eats? Oh, oh, you like Netflix? Oh, you're a risk. Yeah, that funding's not coming in. Tough titties. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. And that's all before a possible change of government, with the general being around May. If the opposition gets in, they've promised to remove negative gearing on investment properties, which would make matters even worse. So it's going to be a wait and see. But hey, millennials, again, they're a smart bunch. They figured out quite quickly that the National Bank of Mum and Dad's best benefit was staying home for longer. And it creates flow-on effects. You know, they get reduced cost of living, they get more income in their pockets, they get to travel more, they get a bit more freedom. There are detriments, but, you know, like, and, you know, some will branch out and seek more independence, but at the end of the day, there's offerings for them as well. We're seeing developers using the build-to-rent market, like they have successfully done in London and New York and Hong Kong, where for a flat fee, you get a brand new apartment in the center of downtown, and you don't have to worry about utilities or internet or pretty much anything. You can share a car and it's all included. And then there's the co-living players. I also mentioned this in episode 2, if you haven't checked it out, but you know, players like Rome and The Collective and UKO are changing the game, and they're being joined every couple of months by new players like Kin and Caper, who are building this new rental ecosystem that didn't exist years ago. All around community, and I think that's really, really something special that we need to watch more. I admit, it's not for everyone. But if it takes off with younger generations, it will hurt property prices even further in years to come, because those suburbs that are an hour out of the city by train just won't have the same appeal as some do now. So next is marriage and children. I know there's a millennial bent here, but this generation's changing so much across the board, and marriage is no exception. they are either not marrying at all or marrying much later, with the percentage of young people married or living on their own has dropped by more than 50% since the 1960s. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, and it adds to my narrative, so, you know, I'm going to keep going with it. But it's this shift in personal goals and values that are changing the traditional ownership mentality, you know, for the future. The stat that blew me away most was that, you know, the sheer number of millennials that will remain unmarried through the age of 40, and the marriage rate, you know, predicted to drop lower than the last three generations. This, of course, is also leading to no children. You know, my wife and I have decided not to have kids, but, you know, the birth rate is now at a historically low levels, giving millennials the ability to change careers regularly, more financial freedom, more opportunities to travel, and, you know, hopefully we can all retire a little bit earlier than our parents. So I think this is all this narrative around the sharing economy. We would rather have access to something than necessarily own it. And, you know, this generation grew up in the middle of the GFC. It had limited access to jobs after college. It always looked for ways to hustle and do more or make more. And we're seeing this with the whole sharing economy. PwC says 57% think access is the new ownership, and we're seeing this across the board with Uber, Airbnb, Zipcar, Rent the Runway, and eBay, all definitely the standouts here. And more of these players are coming on board every single day. I raised the future of transportation in episode 3, and highly recommend if you haven't checked it out. But what I failed to mention was the rise in car subscriptions. This isn't another leasing ploy to get cars moving off the lot, but it's turning cars into a premium Netflix-like service. Porsche launched it first with their Passport offering in Atlanta, Georgia, where for $2,000 a month, you can get unlimited car swaps, insurance, maintenance, all included. And recently, Volvo announced theirs, starting at $600 per month, giving you access to a brand new XC40, all your maintenance, insurance, roadside assistance, all just taken care of for one flat fee. I don't know about you, but I certainly see rental companies jumping on the bandwagon here, and I think it's a good thing. We get to remove this unnecessary expenditure from our household budgets. We get to use a car when we want to, and we don't just have it sitting there because, hey, let's face it, most cars sit there in parking for most of their lives. But I'll cover the sharing economy in detail later in another episode. But in closing, millennials are changing industries and traditions and are using emerging technology to do it. This generation is also teaching the next generation, so their impact on ownership could shape it for the next 30 plus years. As I said earlier, it's not for everyone, but it's certainly exciting as a futurist to sit back and watch it all happen. Thanks for listening to episode 5. I'd love to hear what you think. Hit me up at Twitter, at Keegan Sard, and until next time, thanks again.
Thank you for tuning into the Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, make sure to subscribe and share the podcast with friends and colleagues.